To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. I've got the Adventures of Alibi Jones going on. Science fiction in the not-too-distant future. In about the year 2139 at this point. Alibi Jones has been helping the mostly energy-based life form, the Rodae, fight off invasion and attack of their corporeal substance, the Great Ship, by the Hunger. The Hunger is a malevolent mass of bioenergy comprised of the elite of the ancient enemy, who'd propelled their energy, their very souls, forward through time into the future, only in the end to be denied new bodies. And so became the Hunger. It's been a long and costly fight, but it appears Alibi has helped the Rodae nearly win the battle. Except that now a safe Solar Alliance interplanetary force, safe Dreadnought, and its support wing, its entire fleet, have arrived on scene. And they're going to be looking to avenge the destruction of a safe Stinger ship earlier. That happened when the ancient enemy, the Hunger, controlled part of the Rodae ship. So it looked like the Rodae destroyed the safe ship. So this could get ugly fast. We're going to find out what happens just ahead in Chapter 34 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Get a little bit of news, a little book news first. A is for April and Alibi Jones. Got Alibi Jones promotions going all month long. I'm starting with a reduced price on the latest Alibi Jones book. Celebrating the month with specials. Of course, the Alibi Jones original novel, the ebook, is free at Barnes & Noble, Rakuten Kobo, Apple Books, Drive-Thru, Smashwords, and more. It's 99 cents at Amazon for some reason. And I did. I lowered the price of the new Alibi Jones book, The Adventures of Alibi Jones, Six Short Stories, to 99 cents for the month. It had been $2.99. That's what's going on now, and there is more to come. You want to find out before anybody else what's happening? Just become a patron. I'm signing people up. Become a patron through Patreon, and you'll get even more. My thanks to Glow in the Dark Radio's patrons, Kay, Paul, Ryan, Barney, and Jim, for your support. Look for something a little extra coming from me this weekend, tied into A is for April and Alibi Jones, tied into our promotions. And putting something together. So if you'd like, join now, support this podcast, and you will get exclusive stuff. Just go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. I've got Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, Chapter 34, on the way next. Coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. Now, as a writer, I never take words for granted.
Hey guys, I'm Ray Belli, the host of Words for Granted, a brand new podcast that looks at how words change over time. Have you ever wondered where words come from or why they mean what they mean? Yeah? Well, me too. In fact, I think about these things all the time, and that's why I've created Words for Granted. It's kind of like an ongoing greatest hits compilation of the most fascinating word evolutions in the English language. Did you know that villain once meant farm worker, or that bead once meant prayer? The bottom line is, if you're a word nerd, let's be friends. You can find out more about the show at wordsforgranted.com and follow Words for Granted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I hope you tune in to the next show.
Now here's Chapter 34 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Go
Captain, stand down and identify yourself, Anita called out to the comm.
What? Why, who is that? Came the reply.
This is Anita Capituna, she said. I'm on a special mission for Prime Rep Constantine's office, and you, sir, are well outside of safe jurisdiction.
There was a moment's silence before the captain responded.
This is Admiral Leonard, he said. I've heard of you, Ms. Capituna. Certainly. You're the former Prime Rep and Ceres Central Governor, correct? Used to be with the Project?
That is correct, she said.
You'd been reported missing, presumed dead, the Admiral said. The Stinger ship that called us in mentioned you were here. Glad you're alive, ma'am. But they reported you called in a false rescue.
False rescue? She asked.
Said you'd called for safe pickup, but that your son was already here with you when they arrived, the Admiral said.
My son? Alibi Jones arrived shortly before the safe ships did, she said. They were an awful long time in responding. He happened to be out looking for me when I was reported missing. Only a coincidence he found me first.
Really?
Admiral, I'm a former Prime Rep, she said. I know how the system works, and when to call in backup or rescue. I didn't summon safe help until absolutely necessary, and well before Alibi showed up.
I see, the Admiral said.
If it makes you feel any better, I told Alibi he shouldn't have come, Anita said. But impetuous youth will do as it will.
We may have lost a ship full of safe crewmen and women, the Admiral said.
I know that, she said, empathy in her tone. I know. They were trying to help me.
We have orders to take out that alien ship, the one that absorbed our Stinger, he said. So we're not standing down. Sorry if the Project doesn't like it. That thing is too dangerous.
My alibi is on board that alien ship, she said. It's not a Project thing. Give me a chance to get him out of there before you start blasting, please.
Again, Anita Capituna was asking, but not expecting a no.
You think he's still alive? The Admiral asked.
I know he is, she said.
Our Stinger ship reported the other Stinger was absorbed inside that thing, too, the Admiral said. But they made it sound like they didn't survive that encounter.
I've got two ships heading there now to try to get him off of that thing, Anita said. All I'm asking for is a little time for them to try to get him out.
There was a pause as the Admiral seemed to consider the options.
15, the Admiral said after about 2 minutes' silence.
What? Anita asked.
You have 15 minutes, he said, to get him out of there. Then we start shooting.
Thank you, she said. I don't think he can hear us, Katie said.
Try him again, Kit said.
Alibi, it's Katie. Kit and I are here, outside the ship. Can you hear me? See, Kit, I don't think he...
I hear you, Alibi said. I'm still in here.
You need to come out, Kit said. Safe forces are here. They plan to destroy that ship.
I can't, Alibi said. If I leave now, the ancient enemy will take over this vessel. I can't give them this ship. Come on, Alibi, Katie said. You're about to be killed.
No, he said. There's one last thing I can try.
Alibi Jones was a spot of calm amidst the maelstrom inside the alien vessel as wayward souls of both the ancient enemy and the Rodei careened around him. He reached out, feeling for the shape of the ship. He returned it to its original shape, though it was now somewhat smaller in size, having lost some of its material mass. He could feel the fibrous threads that wove together to create the ship beginning to harden, to lose their plasticity and ability to flow, as the life of the Rodei flowed out of them. Alibi, as the ship, reached a tendril out into space and then broke it off so it became a shard of the ship's substance. He then fed a Rodei soul into it to see if it would be safe and contained. The Rodei's spark flared brightly even as Alibi launched the shard off into deep space.
The Rodei will survive this. Good.
Alibi felt out the weaknesses in the ship, cracks in its coherence. The ancient enemy's stunts had damaged the ship. Alibi decided he would try his idea. The ancient enemy couldn't take over the ship if there was no ship left to take over. Alibi drew the ship's engines inside the ship itself, using the flow left in the Rodei substance to maneuver them into place around him, creating a near cocoon of engines directed outward, away from himself.
Fire!
Alibi turned on the engines.
Boom! No boom? And I'm hot!
Alibi thought the engines would blow the ship apart when he turned them on. Instead, they were being contained. Alibi was surrounded by the blasting heat. The ancient enemy had spied his efforts and maneuvered themselves into position around him to hold the ship together with their energies. They'd evidently created a shell, a force field around Alibi Jones that was redirecting the engine's heat and power back at him. Alibi drew more of the Rodei substance to himself, thickening the layer surrounding his EVA suit and blocking out the worst of the engine's heat.
Good. Now, more power.
Alibi drove the engines hotter. The energies of the surviving ancient enemies strove to contain him, hold back the power. Even with his EVA suit and the added protection of a thick layer of the Rodei substance, Alibi was swimming in sweat and almost passing out from the extreme heat.
More!
If he had been able to blow the ship apart as he'd wanted to originally, there would have been some destruction for sure, chunks of the ship ripped apart and scattered, rendering it useless to the ancient enemy's bioelectrical matrices. But he didn't know what would happen now. He was straining to stay conscious as the engines kept their burn up, but he could also feel the ancient enemy straining.
Would they crack?
No.
More!
Alibi Jones felt the ship shudder before he passed out. Watching from the bridge of her ship, Katie saw the giant alien vessel begin to glow.
Alibi Jones, get out of there! What are you doing?
He didn't answer her. Glowing veins began appearing across the surface of the Leviathan, a lattice work of bright lines across the inky black surface. More lines appeared, glowing ever brighter.
Boom!
Katie was nearly blinded as the giant ship erupted in a glaring ball of bright blue light. The vessel detonated around Alibi in the center, fracturing into 1,000 shards, spraying out in all directions.
Ah!
Katie gasped with sudden pain. She looked down. One large shard pierced her ship's hull and managed to embed itself deep inside her ship and her left thigh. She tried to pull herself off of the jagged tip. It was holding on to her living tissues. The living Rodei substance began overspreading her thigh.
No! She cried. No, no, no!
She ripped herself off of the chunk of Rodei stuff. Blood began pumping from the gaping wound. She applied direct pressure and backed away from the shard, sticking up through her ship into the bridge. The end of the sliver seemed to soften. It started waving around like a tentacle, blindly seeking her out. She backed away from it, and then struggled down the ship's corridor to the sick bay. Katie managed to roll herself into the Medicure pod before she passed out from her blood loss. Alibi came to his senses, surrounded by darkness.
Did it work? I can't tell. Everything is black. Am I dead? I don't think so. Are they dead?
Alibi tried to cast out his thoughts for a sign of the Rodei or the ancient enemy. Nothing.
Maybe they're finally gone. I hope the Rodei survived in some way. The ancient enemy? They were already dead 1,000,000 years ago.
You just keep telling yourself that, a voice said. Evidently, the ship was still intact, and not all the matrices had been expelled. At least one remained, manifesting itself in front of Alibi. The man's matrix was projecting a mental image of himself, an older man in a lab coat. Alibi knew many of the ancient enemy's time-traveling elite were scientists. This one looked familiar.
"I'd like to at least pretend to engage in conversation," the man said, "instead of blasting each other mind to mind. Would that bother you?"
When Alibi didn't answer, he continued, "I have something of great value I can pass along to you, if you allow my matrix to continue to inhabit a part of this ship."
"Do you now?"
The man didn't answer.
"What?"
He frowned. "Conversation, please?" This matrix, this last of the ancient enemy, struck Alibi as a little off. More than that, Alibi was beginning to think he knew who it was.
"You're Quintele," Alibi said. "You're the mad creator of the travel chair of Inokata."
"You know me. How quaint and unusual. I did not expect to find one of you with such esoteric knowledge."
"I didn't know you worked with Azamet."
"Ha, I did not. I escaped and joined the Travelers, but Azamet didn't know I'd become one of his traveling elite."
"Really?"
"Azamet didn't know," Quintele said. "So many things unknown. So much will be lost. I feel the
discorporation
occurring now. Do you know, not all of us made it out of the time stream. Some yet still travel. Others left the stream too early. We lost at least two of our wisest ones too soon, too early. You should search your myths and histories for Azores and a Melinet."
"Why our histories?"
"We are energy traveling through time, but we did not move much through space. Though now aligned with deep nothing, the galactic neighborhood where our world was at the moment we left once lined up, for a time, long ago, with your world. The Earth passed through the vicinity of where we'd lived eons earlier. Some of the elite may have found bodies to inhabit."
"To possess," Alibi said.
"So you say, and yet, the Rodei, are they not that kind of possession?"
"Well, not exactly," Alibi said. "They no longer take life, and they don't wish to take over a life. They need symbiotic hosts, they say."
"What is life?" Quintele mused. "What is it to live, to be alive? Is it to have a physical body? Is it to be a thinking, functioning consciousness? I am. We are conscious. I am one. We are many. Legion. Once I had a body, was wholly body and mind. One of the greatest minds of our people. But our time was ending. The end of all things. The destruction of our homes. Our world. All seemed doomed, lost."
"Let him rant. Maybe I can spot a weakness."
"Instead of concentrating on survival, our greatest minds turned their thoughts to escape. Our loftiest set high goals for the survival or escape of the entire race. Others were more concerned with their own personal escape. Those concerned for racial survival created star seeds, those packages of DNA we shot out into the greater universe. 1 million star seeds sent out as payloads on 1 million projectiles. Even as our home planet exploded in cataclysm, the star seeds were launched to carry on our racial legacy forward. The seeds would sow themselves for the next 1 million years.
Alibi tried to stop the man.
"I know all this," Alibi said. "You don't have to spell it out for me. I know one of those seeds started us humans on our path."
"Yes, it seems you grew, developed, as a new race, our descendants in a way," Quintele said. "In some ways, our race lives on. But that was only one solution. Others were not so altruistic. Our top scientist Azamet's experiments with time travel, combined with the efforts of our bioenergetics, suggested an alternative means of survival and escape. He would move our bioelectrical energy matrices, our living energies and consciousness, ahead through time. Some of the people could escape our doom." The lab-coated man smiled at Alibi. "Faced with the imminent destruction of our race and our home, the risks seemed to be worth taking.
Over 100 of us, the elite of the people, lined up to be sent into the future. We hoped some of the starseeds would be successful. We hoped our race would spring forth anew to provide bodies for us in the future. We were selfish in our hopes. A gamble, to be sure, but our world was destroyed. Our race would soon be wiped out. We did what we had to.
But you failed, Alibi said. We had bodies and the means of our return. Azamet even incorporated my own travel chair for added power. But something went wrong. As we returned, the bodies Azamet had prepared for us died. Without the bodies, we had nowhere to go. We all began to enter the only body there, Azamet's own, but our many energies soon consumed it. We tried to possess the ship itself, but failed. Lost in time and deep space, we were only energy. The bioelectrical energy matrices of just over 100 of the people. We became the hunger.
You were weak, Alibi goaded the man.
We were strong. We survived. We roamed the expanses of space in search of food and form. Finally, we found the great ship. We expanded into the great ship of the Rodei, and though we hungered, still, we had form.
Yet you were not part of their oneness, Alibi said.
No, Quintile said. We found it confining.
I can understand that, Alibi said. I couldn't take it either.
Yet you wear a shell of their substance, Quintile said.
At their urging, Alibi said, with their encouragement, your people possessed half their substance, half of their ship, without allowing them in. In my case, they're just enhancing my EVA suit.
Your EVA suit? Quintile asked. Your spacesuit.
Spacesuit, EVA suit, whatever, Alibi said.
Do you think about it much?
I give it a lot of thought, Alibi said. It keeps me alive.
Kind of becomes a part of you then, doesn't it? Quintile asked. You don't think of yourself as inside of something else, do you?
Inside? Not really.
But you are inside of something else, so small and tight around you.
Well, yeah, it fits well.
But you can see your helmet, can't you? Quintile asked. The glint of light off your visor?
Never really noticed that, Alibi said. But sure, yeah, now that you mention it.
So close to your head.
As it should be. What are you?
So close to your head. Good thing there's air in here.
What are you?
So close to your head. Tight. Enclosed. And on the other side, out there? Vacuum. Space. Nothing. When you run out of air, there will be nothing between you and the helmet, will there?
No, Alibi said.
I guess not, but...
So close to your head, Quintile repeated.
I'm not running out of air, Alibi said.
Not yet, but you will, Quintile said.
You are already just barely alive in this tiny enclosed space.
It is kind of close in here.
So close to your head, the helmet. Vacuum.
But the air, the recycler will keep it.
But it will stop eventually.
Better be careful how you breathe.
How I breathe? Alibi asked.
Incorrect breathing will make your air run out faster, too soon, Quintile said. Best be careful in such a small space.
No.
Short breaths. Short breaths. Short breaths could be a problem. Short breaths.
Short breaths? Alibi asked.
You know, shallow.
Alibi's suit's systems pinged in his ear.
You are showing accelerated vital signs, Alibi's EVA suit informed him.
Compensating.
Shallow, short breaths, Quintile whispered in Alibi's mind. In a close space. That visor, right in front of your eyes. No room.
Damn, Alibi said.
Can get dizzying in such a tight space. So little air. Short breaths.
You are stressed and stressing the system, the suit said. Compensating.
You see, even now, you are overtaxing the suit's systems, Quintile said. You'll run it down much faster than you thought at first. Run out of air. You're running out of air in this close space.
Alibi panted.
Short breaths, running out of breath, running out of air.
You can't breathe.
So little between you and the vacuum of space.
What are you doing?
Short breaths, running out of air.
No.
That visor almost touches your eyes.
No.
You can't breathe.
No.
Can't.
Alibi gasped, passing out.
Yes, Quintele could not contain his excitement. A new, young body, at long last.
What the hell just happened?
Admiral Leonard, the safe commander, bellowed over the open comm. His ships were scattered in haphazard fashion, tumbling about the loose asteroid field, shredded, pierced, or otherwise penetrated by blasted bits of the Rode ship.
My strike force has been decimated!
I don't know, Anita said. Alibi was in the middle of that explosion.
Where's the alien ship? The Admiral asked. Where did it go?
That was the alien ship, Commander, Emily said. If these readings are right, it blew itself apart.
There is still something there, Kat said. Something remains at the core where the explosion began. It looks like Kit is flying up right next to it.
Kit edged his ship closer to the black capsule-shaped blob of the Rode material. He'd picked it up on his ship sensors right after the massive explosion, an anomalous stability amidst the resulting chaos.
Alibi Jones,
Kit said, trying to raise Alibi on the comm.
Alibi Jones, are you in there?
As Kit watched, a set of fingertips poked through the surface of the capsule. They pushed the material apart until both hands could fit through the gap and grip the ripped edges. The hands violently ripped open a gaping wound of a hole, and a figure in an EVA suit squeezed out. Hello! Alibi's voice called over the comm. Kit wondered why he didn't sound the way he usually did on the translator. Strange.
Hello, Alibi Jones, Kit said.
You know me? The figure asked. Kit trained two of his ship's external cameras on the figure floating outside his ship, trying to get a look at the face inside the EVA suit's helmet to see if it was really Alibi. Something was off. But the face was familiar, even if he did not wish to see it. But some of them did.
You look like Alibi Jones, Kit said.
I hope I am, he said. But it's the oddest thing. I can't remember. I don't remember who I am. Just woke up in the dark in there. Hey, can I come in?
Yes. I will come get you. In a moment.
Kit ended one communication and opened another on a private channel to his brother. He had a question for him. Something he wanted to know before he went outside. Kit, dressed in his own EVA suit, floated over to the figure floating outside his ship. Are we friends? The man asked as the Darkur approached.
No, Kit said. I do not know you.
Really? Because I thought I was remembering that we...
Stop,
Kit said. He brought up his blaster, made sure the other could see it was set on full kill.
Stop the charade right now. Who are you?
You said I was Alibi Jones, he said.
I thought that you were, Kit said. However, in the past, my brother isolated the bioelectrical energy matrix signatures of the ancient enemy. I received those from him and scanned you for any sign of them before I left the bridge.
Kit waved the blaster.
I ask you again, who are you?
I am Quintele, the man said. Alibi Jones is gone. I hope we can be His words were cut off as the black blob oozed back around him, covering his face and body. It started to pull him back inside of the blob. Kit fired.
Fwash!
The blast was deflected by whatever the substance was made out of as it loped around the figure. Kit noted the substance's resilience and slight ablative qualities in absorbing and reflecting the energy with a strange detachment, as what was once Alibi Jones disappeared inside the blob. He raised the blaster to shoot again.
Please, do not shoot,
a voice said inside of his mind, different from the false Alibi.
Who are you?
Kit asked.
We are Rode, the voice said. We are all that remain. The embryo before you.
Embryo?
Kit said.
An awkward metaphor,
the Rode said.
The black substance. We are. So again, please do not shoot us.
I am shooting at the one you hold within,
Kit said.
If you do not wish to be shot at, I would suggest disgorging the human so that I may shoot him alone and not you and him.
We were the oneness before...
The voice echoed in Kit's mind.
Well, before. Now we are not. No longer. Oneness. Alibi Jones became a part of the oneness, a part of us. We know that you are Kit, and you were a friend. He believed you would again be friends one day.
He was wrong, Kit said. As usual. I saved him from one of them before, you know.
We know, the Rode said. We were the oneness.
But it does not matter now, Kit said. For this time, the ancient enemy beat him. Alibi Jones is gone.
From his body?
The Rode said.
Yes, but we have him, safe, in here.
You have him? How?
Kit asked.
He has been with us in the oneness, as we said. When Quintele shut him up inside his mind, we saw it, and plucked Alibi's essence out to join with ours. We are not the oneness, but we are legion. He is with us now, though he lies dormant.
Why did you do this?
Kit asked.
He has been a friend to the Rode. We did not wish to see him discorporate. He was with us before, and often since. It was not a new thing.
What are you going to do next, then? Can you put him back inside his own body and mind?
We will try, but there are two problems,
the Rode said.
We do not know how to oust the ancient enemy in there now. And even if we were positive we could put him back, we don't know how to wake him from the dormant state the ancient enemy put him in.
That sounded like three problems to me, Kit said.
We have another problem,
the Rode said, as the safe dreadnought pulled up beside the little Dakur craft and the blob.
However many you count.
Dakur craft, this is the safe dreadnought 701. Identify yourself, the official voice said.
This is Kitra von Lugrundler of the Dakur diplomatic families, Kit said. I only identify myself as a courtesy. You are outside of your jurisdiction, safe dreadnought 701.
As are you, Dakur craft, the safe voice said over the comm.
I am a diplomat, Kit said. My jurisdiction? My diplomatic status with your Solar Alliance and many other governments provides that I represent Dakur wherever I may be physically. I am always within my own jurisdiction. But you are beyond your Solar Alliance declared borders, safe craft.
Be that as it may,
another voice, a human male, stern, started speaking. Move your ship away from that black...
blob there.
Why?
Kit asked.
Why?
The voice on the other end was stunned.
I am engaged in a diplomatic meeting with this blob, as you call it,
Kit said.
What? The safe voice asked, incredulous. That thing just blew up. Well, the thing it used to be, that giant old ghost ship. A billion shards blew out, shredding through my strike group. Most of my ships are limping back to port, the ones still intact.
Yes, my own ship was spared any contact by the good fortune of my positioning,
Kit said.
Though I need to check on my friend whose ship spared my own. I have not heard from her yet.
You came to this blob first? The safe voice asked.
I was called to it, Kit said.
For diplomacy.
As I said, I was in the middle of some when you just interrupted,
Kit said.
Which I need to get back to. This pause may be detrimental. The Greater Ta will not like that report. I will make it clear you are impeding me. The blame will not be mine.
What?
The safe voice sputtered on Kit's comm.
I merely state facts, Kit said.
Look, you insolent furball... Admiral Leonard,
Anita Capitana's voice came barking through the comm, interrupting him. Kit thought he could see her cruiser approaching, next to the dreadnought, but his EVA suit sensors couldn't confirm it. He needed to be back on his ship's bridge. He began to make his way back to the airlock.
"Admiral, you don't want to start a diplomatic incident on top of everything else, do you?" Anita asked. "That's the Dakor Chief Diplomat's son. Do you think he's out here on a joyride?"
"But Chief Dip- Aw, hell," Leonard said. "I hate this elite shit. And you people, sticking up for aliens. That black thing blew apart my strike group."
"I'm looking for my nephew," Anita said. "It's family. Nothing alien about that."
"He is inside of the black blob," Kit said, as he re-entered his ship. "At least, his body is."
"Oh no," Anita gasped. "Allies?"
"The Rodei have saved his energies within themselves," Kit added as quickly as he could. "There may be hope of saving him. But right now, one of the ancient enemy possesses Alibi Jones's body within the Rodei core."
The Rodei spoke inside of Kit's mind.
"We are not the core. We are not the oneness. We are just what is left."
"How diplomatically you broke that news to Anita Capitana, brother,"
Kat said over the comm.
"Kat, not now," Anita said. She looked over at the Catman, across the cruiser's bridge. Surprisingly little tact, but then, that's Kit. Why should he change now?
"No! No, 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 no!" Emily almost shouted, frantic. Kat and Anita both turned, seeing if Emily was okay. In the center of the bridge, a glowing, greenish-yellow figure appeared.
That was Chapter 34 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi rescued by Kit, although possessed by Quintele? The great ship of the Rodei blown apart? Katie hit by a shard of the ship? Then there's Admiral Leonard and his fleet. He's a piece of work. Not happy with Alibi, Anita, or the Rodei, or Kit, for that matter. Being a diplomat and that elite shit and all. And finally, a ghost appearing on their ship? But there weren't really ghosts, right? So what the... Yeah. Guess you'll have to join us next week to find out what's going on. Or I suppose you can always cheat and get the Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest audiobook. Audible, Amazon, or iTunes, if you want it. At any rate, I will have Chapter 35 for you here on Glow in the Dark Radio on our next episode. Again, A is for April and Alibi Jones. There's Alibi Jones specials. You can go to glowinthedarkradio.com to find out more. And please join Patreon. Support Glow in the Dark Radio as a patron at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. We'd love to have your support. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.